While there are those popular calls from First Nations Australians for an empowered voice in our political process, many of the hundreds of leaders involved in these processes so far are more measured. Danny Larkin is a Bundjalung woman and a lawyer. She's an advocate for the Uluru Statement from the Heart, and her work looks at examples like Canada and New Zealand, where Indigenous voices have been incorporated into political processes already. But when we spoke, I asked her first whether the criticisms from the government's backbench this week doom the process Ken Wyatt announced even before it begins.
I don't think so. I think I was expecting a reaction like that, likewise with probably most Australians. It's a huge change, and we haven't had the opportunity in campaigning to the rest of Australia, so far as education goes, with what this voice means. And so that needs to be rolled out, you know, in a thorough way. And I think once that process begins to start, things will hopefully change. I have hope. I think really it's just there's a few sort of misconceptions surrounding the functions of the voice and what it would be. But I think once those sort of anxieties are settled, and that just comes through actually being informed, and that'll happen later throughout the co-design process, that hopefully those tensions will sort of fade away.
And what do we mean by the co-design process? I mean, what is going to happen next?
I mean, ultimately, if we're looking at really applying self-determination to this, which is what the Statement from the Heart calls for, this is going to be looking at, you know, co-designing and working in partnership and negotiating and having discussions equally. So that's going to be Indigenous Australians with the Australian government. But I think the biggest thing about the co-design process is ensuring that it really picks up the thorough consultation that's been had with all the 13 dialogues in even just preparing for the Uluru Convention that happened in 2017, you know, making sure what the consensus is amongst community for what we're asking for to be recognised, which is obviously substantial forms of recognition, that they be considered and listened to and investigated.
The focus has been on the idea of the voice to Parliament, and the suggestion from some has been that this would be a third chamber of Parliament. Now, we've heard eminent constitutional experts describe that today as nonsense. But what would a voice look like? Are there examples, practical examples, we can start talking about now?
Yeah, look, in terms of the structure, the voice model, we're at a very preliminary stage right now. That would come after this co-design process has been established, and we haven't even gotten there yet. But there are some real viable options that we can look abroad to in, you know, similar Commonwealth countries like Canada and New Zealand, so for instance, that we might make a different kind of prototype that would fit Australian wants and needs. And there's certainly been those types of suggestions within the reports and within the discussion so far over the last 10 years. So I would like to see those sort of come to the forefront in terms of, you know, how are we going to structure this? But it's certainly not a third chamber, though. The fact that it doesn't have any veto power immediately knocks it out as a third chamber of Parliament. It's merely an advisory body. It's quite a modest request given the historic oppression politically, culturally, that Indigenous Australians have faced in this country. And I think ultimately, it makes for anyway a better law and policy making process for all Australians. It shifts the consciousness of federal politicians to take into other broader considerations that really relate to culture and other society sort of issues that, you know, our First Nations are continuously up against. And we can move forward from that. There's a real healing and reconciliation just in and of that process.
Bundjalung woman, lawyer Danny Larkin.